Support for Politics and Public Policy reporting on SDPB is made possible by SDN Communications, your business broadband provider. Learn more at sdncommunications.com.
And welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. We're broadcasting live this week from SDPB's Black Hills studio. It's time for our Dakota political junkies to join us, and they're both have made it to the studio. We have Seth Tupper, who is with the Rapid City Journal. He's an enterprise reporter there. Seth, thanks for being back in the studio, for walking the block that it took you.
Thanks for having me.
Also with us, Noel Hamill. He is a former state lawmaker and a member of the South Dakota Newspaper Hall of Fame. Nice to meet you, Mr. Hamill. Thanks for being here.
My pleasure.
And let's go ahead and start with the person who is not in the room, who was actually scheduled to be in the room with us, and that's Denise Ross, because she passed away over the weekend after a long battle with cancer. And I think it's fitting that we sort of begin with her voice, because it was just a month ago that we talked with her on this program about her cancer journey. We spoke with her on June 5th, and... But before we got, before we talked about cancer, I didn't want to miss the opportunity to talk about journalism with Denise, because that's, of course, what she, wanted to talk about the most. Here's a little excerpt.
Well, I graduated from SDSU, go Jacks, in 1992, and worked in newspapers pretty much all the way up. I had 1 year where I did something else, but then I left the Rapid City Journal in 2006 towards the end of the year. Came back and worked a couple of years for the Mitchell Daily Republic, later 2010, 2011, a couple years after that. And always, once it's kind of like a, once a journalist, always a journalist. Right, once a policeman, always a, once a cop, always a cop. You kind of get into that mentality. So there are, I still consider myself that.
Some things you can't turn off.
Right.
Why journalism? Why politics? What, what were the things that sort of drew you into that?
Journalism was my, I owe all the credit to my mother, because I went to college to have a good time, I'll be perfectly honest. I had never had much trouble in school. I didn't think much about, what do I need to do? I just was like, I was young and wanted to have fun. And my mom recognized that I had some writing talent. And she steered me to journalism, and I got on the SDSU collegian staff, and I was hooked from that point on. I was a freshman, and I never have looked back.
That's a little bit with Denise Ross. We talked with her on June 5th. It was an hour-long conversation about her cancer, and she died this week. She was a longtime Dakota political junkie, as well as, a political blogger and a print journalist editor for the South Dakota Dashboard with Black Hills Knowledge Network, and a colleague of yours, Seth. And I'm just going to sit here and chew on the inside of my cheek so I don't cry. So don't mind me. And it was expected eventually, but it was also a big loss personally and professionally.
Yeah, I just wanted to say in that clip, I had to chuckle because there was, Denise said in that clip, there was 1 year where she did something else.
Yeah.
In true Denise fashion, being humble as she was, that 1 year she went and worked for the, I believe it was called the National Civilian Community Corps, which right. is now an AmeriCorps project. And she was in Denver, I think, working for basically a small stipend and helping. I think she was tutoring and doing some other things in the Denver area. So that was the 1 year she, quote, did something else. Was an important important thing that she did,
others,
that she glossed
yeah.
over there.
Yeah.
But yeah, I knew Denise for 18 years. I met her when I was an intern. I did a journalism internship at the legislature in the year 2000. And Denise was covering the session full-time for the Rep City Journal. And I recognized right away what a talent she was and what a good person she'd be to know as I progressed through my career, and stayed in touch with her throughout the years. And her kids are about the same age as my kids, and right. So over the years we developed a friendship after being colleagues, and just had a tremendous amount of respect for her ability as a journalist. And then as you saw in your interview with her, what a tremendous fight that she put up to try to prolong her life in the face of a terminal cancer diagnosis.
Right. She was, she turned all that research, you know, skills and experience that she had into researching her diagnosis, researching her treatment, researching her diet, and applying everything that she could write up until the last breath, really, was who she was. What's lost when someone like that is gone? What do we lose as a state, as...
Well, I know in Denise, we lose somebody who knew South Dakota like the back of her hand. She had a really unique upbringing. If you read her obituary and see that her dad worked for Norwest Bank, which became Wells Fargo, I believe. And anyway, he moved all around the state. She grew up in a bunch of different communities, Mobridge, Chamberlain, other places. She went to school in Brookings. She lived in Deadwood, and I think for a while, and worked for the Rapid City Journal. Spent her entire life in South Dakota and just knew the people and the politics. She had sources all over the state that she could call on a moment's notice when news broke. So we lose somebody who had a great perspective on the history and the people and the politics of South Dakota, and had a lot of things left to contribute, a lot of knowledge and experience left to impart, I think.
Noel, I want to bring you into the conversation as well, and really bring in some other names of well-known South Dakota journalists who have left us, David Kranz and others. Let's talk a little bit about Mr. Kranz.
I just can't help but think about, you know, we knew Denise and David Kranz, and the other person I want to mention is Roger Casa, who was less well-known probably because he worked his professional career in Huron. Smaller market. I mean, if you work in Sioux Falls or Rapid City or even Mitchell, as Denise did, you know, it's you tend to become better known. But I know you've talked about Dave Kranz a lot, and I actually hired his sister in Brookings in the 70s, and he stopped into the office one day, I think to check me out more than anything else, to make sure that his sister Cindy had found a good place to work. Just one quick story about Dave, and it's really not about journalism, and that's what I'm trying to get to today, is because a lot of times readers know journalists like Denise or Dave or Roger as journalists because that's what they see in print or online, or and that other side to them is interesting, I think, for all of us. I was, Dave and I used to talk more about baseball than politics, and not just because we were a little bit different perspective on politics, but Dave was a great Atlanta Braves friend, Milwaukee Braves fan, and I was a Yankees fan, and he was a Hank Aaron fan, and I was a Mickey Mantle fan, and he had remembered early in my career that I'd written a column about how Mickey Mantle turned me down for an autograph in 1961 in Minneapolis. And I came home one day from work. I was working at the Cincinnati Post at the time, and there was a package. And I opened it up, and here was an autographed baseball by Mickey Mantle and a note from Dave that said, "Here's your baseball. 30-some years later, I took this up to Minneapolis at a signing because I had a baseball with Henry Aaron's name on it, and I wanted Mickey Mantle's beside it. And by the way, despite what you've read, he was a nice guy." And, you know, Dave and I had a lot of those conversations over the years that were apart from many, many conversations, of course, about politics.
Right.
Because he was the original political junkie.
Tell me a little something about Roger.
Roger Casa worked for the Huron Plainsman more than 40 years. He was the ranking newsroom person. He had an office in the Plainsman, but he preferred to sit out front in the city room where he could solve problems and head off problems and take people as they walked in the door. And, you know, most people wouldn't remember that the big issues of Roger's day, late 60s, early 70s, was the Owyhee Irrigation Project. Mm-hmm. And his newspaper was 120% in favor of it, as was Aberdeen and other towns on the Jim River Valley. but there was a lot of opposition to it. And so Roger, and I'm sitting there watching him operate every day when the publisher comes down and wants another story on their Hawaii project. Meanwhile, he's writing editorials in favor. Roger never wavered. The coverage in the Plainsman of that Oahu project was right down the middle. What the interest from the corner office did was generate more news coverage, but it didn't generate slanted news coverage. And that was to Roger's credit. He was a great newsman. He was driven. I'd been there a few weeks. I was going to get married in June. That would have been 73. And I went over to Roger and I said, Roger, and he sat at a desk where he edited copy. This is during the typewriter era. And I said, Roger, do you remember that when you hired me, I said I was going to get married this year, this spring? And he looked up at me and he said, quizzically said, married? I said, yeah. I said, yeah, I'm going to get married in a couple weeks. I said, I'm going to have to take some time. And he didn't say anything, and he looked up at me, and he said, oh, no problem. Take the whole weekend. Roger was driven and a great teacher, but, you know, the other aspect that must be mentioned is that, you know, he was a great community guy, and a lot of times journalists think they can't be involved in the community, but Roger, I mean, he was choir director of his church. He was involved in the Little League program. They've named a Little League field after him up there.
Yeah.
He's in the South Dakota Hall of Fame.
Right.
So journalists don't have to operate in a bubble, and I think Roger, and there's other examples like Ralph Nocticle and Plant, but Roger was someone who I wanted to make sure was remembered.
Let's sort of honor those memories by talking about some of the news of the week. And On Point on NPR this morning, I don't know if you heard it or not, Seth, but they did an hour on Maria Butina.
Okay.
And I didn't
get... Is that the pronunciation?
That's my pronunciation.
I only write it.
Yeah. I'm going with Maria Butina. And that is... I wasn't able to listen because of, you know, getting ready for today's program. But you've done a lot of work in the Rapid City Journal. Folks can find it at rapidcityjournal.com. Go ahead and subscribe. You know, it's time to do that online statewide. So give us an overview of where we stand today with what you're looking into right now.
I'll say first, you know, Denise Ross, she would have reveled in this story.
Yes,
she would have been working the phones relentlessly. This was the kind of thing that she lived for, was, you know, digging into and tracking down stories like this. But, you know, basically what's being alleged here is that the government is alleging that this Maria Butina, or Butina, however it's actually pronounced, came to the U.S. under a student visa, and they're alleging that was a cover, and that what she was actually doing was running a covert influence campaign to infiltrate American political organizations, including the NRA, and that she had help in this endeavor from South Dakota's own Paul Erickson, who has an apartment and an office in Sioux Falls and has been a longtime person who's just been sort of around politics for many years. And she was arrested, and she's been charged with conspiracy and acting as a foreign agent without registering in advance with the U.S. Attorney General. And there's this mysterious person referred to only as U.S. Person 1 in all the court documents filed in her case. And many people have come to believe that that is Paul Erickson. NPR, I did actually read this morning, says they have confirmed that it's Paul Erickson. They didn't say how they confirmed that, so I don't know. But the descriptions of U.S. Person 1 all match Paul Erickson. And that's kind of where we're at. And so we're waiting, I guess, from the media standpoint and the public standpoint, for more revelations to come out of this case. It's still in the early stages of the prosecution. And Paul Erickson has not been charged with anything. Mm-hmm. Should say her attorney claims that this is all overblown and that if this Maria is guilty of anything, it's just failing to register in advance. And that this has all just sort of been hyped up and overblown and sort of the... all the attention that's being given to Russian meddling in U.S. Right. affairs and things lately. So right. that's kind of where it stands.
So much that still needs to, you know, to come out in the process. But Noel, and we only have a couple minutes left, but I'm wondering, as you watch the stories unfold and some of the commentary, which might be, you know, missing the mark, and some which might be right on, what do you think some of the lessons are? Because there are a lot of people that I've seen who are posting on social media, well, yeah, she had dinner at our house, this was the person who, you know, she really was finding ways to make connections in the community. Now there's a lot of question marks about, you know, who she is and what her intentions were. What are the lessons, you know, for South Dakota lawmakers, for politicians, for all of us?
I don't know that I know what the lessons are. I'm following this story because it's such a fascinating story. But keep in mind that this idea of spy games is as old as civilization. Yeah. This will not rise to the level of, say, Alger Hiss or even Aldrich Ames, I wouldn't think. But it is fascinating. And I, you know, so we have an undocumented agent among us. I want to see where the story goes. I actually, of the two figures, I think Paul Erickson is the more interesting figure because of all the shenanigans that he was able to pull off, not just in South Dakota, but at high levels in other states. And he appears to be, and I don't want to be sued for slander here, but he...
Wait, think about it before you say it, whatever it is.
Is he considered a public figure?
Yeah, I would say so. Paul Erickson is
but he does seem to be a shadowy figure, and now we have this linkage. But as far as lessons, I guess you just can't be too careful. You have to vet your speakers. You have to check everybody out, regardless if they seem to be legitimate. But more to the point, this story is far from over.
Right.
And we'll depend upon Seth Tupper to give us the full story later on.
Yeah. We'll continue to watch the work that you're doing. RapidCityJournal.com. And this is not the last time we'll talk about Denise Ross as well. Her legacy here in the Dakota Political Junkies is long living. And as some of these other wonderful journalists, David Krantz and Roger Casa. So thank you, Noel Hamill and Seth Tupper, for being here, for helping us remember and helping us touch a little base of some of the news this week in South Dakota. We appreciate your time.
Thank you.
You're welcome.